Please listen carefully.
She's 21.
What's up, sisters? Welcome back to another episode of Everyone and Their Sister, the podcast that likes clothes that tell the truth. I'm Christina.
I'm Natasha.
And I'm Stephanie.
And that's right, today we are talking about our Ted Lasso review, a reference you would have only caught if you actually already seen this season. And I will say, hopefully we're in for a short and sweet ride because we're working on a timeline, something we don't normally do and I don't think we're good at. But we can only pray, you know? We'll try to embody the sense of that timeline. Let's just kick right off. We know what Ted Lasso is. I don't think we've done a Ted Lasso episode before, but we all know about that little soccer show with Jason Sudeikis just being like a happy man. So we'll roll right into the episode, I think, and what we thought about it. But I will say, very controversial season. Lots of mixed reviews, mostly unfavorable. But whether you liked this show or whether you liked the season or not, I mean, hands down, it's definitely the weakest of all the three.
Yeah, of all three seasons. I just want to also inform our audience, I am talking into the front of the mic.
So exciting for you. So pleased.
Yes, we've learned. we've lived and learned. And also in Ted Lasso, you do see the commentators talk into the front of the mic, which is very fucking annoying that I never
pressed
noticed.
Right up into their mouth. Not an inch of space between their mouth and the front of the microphone, as opposed to the top for some reason.
But yeah, thoughts this season, definitely not my favorite. I think there were two or three strong episodes. But the season had a lot of potential. Like, they were trying to get two really main points across. I think one, it's not about Ted, and two, hurt people, and they did not do it well.
I felt like every episode dragged and they were so long.
But I will say, that's a good point. So season one, really tight 30-minute episodes. I remember this being a situation where we were even like surprised it was a 30-minute show, and like episodes are clean, they're tight, the jokes are hitting, they're popping the way that they need to be. Season two, realized looking back on it, a little bit longer. We start getting into like the 40, 50 minute range. But this season was outlandish with the number of like 50 plus, an hour long.
An hour and 17 for that last episode. Absolutely.
Too many. I could almost see that, like, okay, it's your last episode ever. It's your series finale. It's going to be an hour. But the rest of your season. Yeah, exactly. The rest of them should have been 30 minutes. It was too long. And it was too long with just stuff that wasn't really moving anything forward.
Yeah.
There was a lot of rehashing this season of stuff I felt like we had kind of moved on from. So it was a bit odd to go through it. It's such a shame to be talking about a show like this in this way, because season one and season two, even though I know some people aren't as big a fan of season two either, but season one and season two are so strong. Such good television, very different, very unique. And then we get something like this and it's kind of like, oh, how did you fumble it at the very end? Like, how did we get here? How did this happen? Yeah. What change happened between season two and three that got us kind of lost in the sauce here?
Let's talk about that locker room episode with the photos. What the fuck?
It's We Will Never Have Paris, because it's the same episode where, so in this episode, Ted is freaking out because his ex-wife is going to Paris with her new boyfriend, who the show does not examine further enough, is now dating their previous couple's therapist. Okay, this is a wild thing that we can dig into.
Wildly crazy.
But let's dig into what was the weirdest part of this episode, was the main storyline of the nudes being leaked from a bunch of people's phones hacked. And one in particular,
including Kile's.
Kile.
It was so weird. You've said it before, you have lots of thoughts about this, go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, like this like locker room chat where they're literally going person by like player by player, and they're like, these are my two cents, and I was like, what? Like, this feels like a children's program where they're like trying to really explain something down, and they would like repeat sort of the same thing and like really reinforce it. And hey, the message, correct, 100% correct, totally agree with it. But why wouldn't they just make it flow like they normally do in the show? Like, this just felt so off in so many ways. Like, the writing was so different. And I think you looked it up and said the writer was different from the usual or something like
that. Yes. So, there are two staff writers who typically are just people that, like, aid in writing episodes that other people are the leads on that took the lead for this particular episode. Both of them had not written an episode, like, quote-unquote, on their own before. One of them is just this guy. I don't know much about him. But the other one is the real-life version of the person Keely is based off of. So I think perhaps one of the reasons why she's, like, a lead writer on this episode is that something similar like this happened to her. She was a model. Right. It sounds like she was, from what I understand, I think she's, like, one of those Sun Times girls where in the UK they have, like, the newspapers where there's just, like, a topless woman every Sunday. Where she's, like, in a bathing suit or something. So, like, that was kind of her job for a really long time. And that makes sense.
I was going to say, it could be that, like, maybe because of that situation that she thought it was very important to have this roundtable discussion.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, again, the message isn't wrong. And the opinions people are having are not different from things that they would normally have. And it's a situation that would happen to these people. It's kind of purely just that the writing was off. It was honestly, in that scene, it was bad. Because people don't talk like that.
Yeah.
You don't really sit there and have a moment where everyone pipes up and goes, this is my 3 seconds of opinion, and then back down and then don't really talk again about it. Like, it was so... It had the appearance of the heart of a Ted Lasso episode and scene, but it was kind of lacking that, like, punch of soul in it for something that, honestly, it's kind of a shame because it is an important thing to talk about if you're going to talk about it. So it almost, like, deserves better in that sense.
And yeah, and not that I want to give, like, assholes any screen time at all, but knowing what sports culture is like and cis men's culture is like, to see all these men having this conversation, I'm like, that would simply never happen.
But I do think the point of Ted Lasso, especially with these particular men, is like, no, but for them, they are respectful dudes, largely. Like, even, like, if you want to talk about things that would never happen, like, even just the fact that back in season one, I think, when Sam covers the logo of the airline company that is responsible for a bunch of, like, climate issues and disasters that are happening in Nigeria, and then the whole team supports him, and then the leaders and, like, Rebecca supports him, and then they just end up with a new sponsor the next season. Like, that also would never happen in a sports culture. Like, all of those dudes would be protecting their bag as well.
That's true, but that felt more like, I don't know, like, that felt more hopeful than anything versus, like, this was very, like, if you're having a conversation, it can't happen in a silo. You know what I mean? Like, it was very, like...
The writing was weird. Even when people disagreed, it was odd. Because
they
had too many episodes.
They did have too many
episodes. And I think that was the problem. So they had all these filler episodes, and I'm like, let's try something new. Let's do this, let's do that. And I was like, I don't think it fit... it doesn't fit what they were trying to do. Like,
I could have lived with the number of episodes had they been shorter. I think that's it. I think
shorter and tighter. Yeah. Like, they just needed the story to be tightened. Like, the Nate thing should have happened at the beginning. Like, it should have been, like, 3 episodes in. We should have started seeing, like, reparations made at that point.
And I think that's a good point for us to, like, really, like, get into it. There are a couple of major big storylines this season. We'll just kind of maybe go through them one by one. And let's start with Nathan.
Yeah.
Because they really did build...
I hate him so much.
But I get that because, honestly, like, he was so hateable at the end of the last season. Even when you know the... Even when you have the ability to understand what might bring a person like Nate to where he got, he is so... He just has such a, like, vile vibe about him. And the fact that we don't even really get an episode to, like, dig more into that, he's kind of, like, immediately... cut off at the knees where he's still being a dick, but there's clearly something going on, but you don't really get, there's just, like, not enough time dedicated to him either because when they
almost, like, soften the dick,
you know? And it's almost weird because I'd actually rather he went full throttle for a little bit and then pulled back. We were talking about this because we watched the last couple episodes together. I almost wish they had kind of broken up the seasons into like half parts, like first six episodes part A, last six episodes part B, and maybe had a couple episodes where Nathan is just like foot on the gas, embracing, you know, everything he's always thought he's wanted, being a raging dick, learning from Rupert, and kind of like aspiring to be this kind of person. And then we discuss coming to a head where he realizes that like Ted has never actually blamed him and has always forgiven him, and Ted finds himself at fault for not being there to support Nate properly, and then that creating the redemption story where like you actually see Nate apologize to more people. Like the apology to Will was necessary, but like I also do want to see him apologize to Ted, even though I understand that the point of view is that like Ted didn't need an apology. I feel like us as the audience still kind of deserve to see more of that, of like,
I mean, he technically did apologize to Ted. It was just so late.
It's the last episode.
Like he just subtly shows up and is like, I mean, I don't know. I think I would have liked to have seen like maybe, yeah, again, him follow in Rupert's steps. Maybe him see Rupert fall first and then be like, maybe what I'm doing isn't gonna lead to anything good for me in the end. Not that that actually happens in real life. Shitty people get the best things for some reason, but but yeah, like I don't know, like even like that point with like Rupert cheating on his newer wife and like sleeping around, I think they could have done something with that where like Nate's like, oh, that's not really what I'm about, and realizing, oh, maybe Rupert isn't the best example, and then, or like doing something so awful to Ted and Ted still forgiving him again. Maybe something like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's so weird to say that, like, it's an interesting scene and well done to have Nate finally, like, again, get another piece of what he's always wanted, where Rupert's like, oh, yeah, come have drinks with me. And then low-key, it's just an excuse to cheat on his wife. And Nate's like, I don't want to cheat on my girlfriend. And so at that point, he then decides to quit the club. But you never see him quitting the club. He simply tells Rupert, oh, I actually can't come out tonight. And then he leaves. And then the next episode, Nate's no longer with the club. You find out eventually that he quit. And it's just one of those things where it's like, I don't know why, like, I just don't know why you wouldn't film that scene. I don't understand why you would only show the aftermath.
There was a lot of stuff that they did off screen that I was surprised about them doing off screen, and then what they chose to keep on screen. And I was like, listen, we didn't need that on screen.
Oh, and I'll say this. I'll say this as well. First of all, Jade, Nate's girlfriend. I just don't want to forget the fact that the first time we meet Jade, she's a fucking bitch. She is so rude.
As she should be.
She's so, I'm sorry, no, okay? Because she doesn't know that there's a reason to hate Nate when she refused. Actually, at that point, I don't even think there was.
I think he's being creepy and has always like,
but the, to her. Not like, at the I beginning.
I think he's just
that
weird.
The very first time Jade is.
But he goes there all the time.
Yeah, but the very first time Jade is introduced, he just wants to get the window seat for his parents' anniversary, and they refuse to take a reservation for him because he's not a name or he's not attractive. And then, like, even when he shows up the night of and the window seat is clearly empty in this restaurant that has literally never been packed in its fucking life, okay, they still refuse to give it to him, and he has to like walk up and demand it. And I understand what they were saying in that moment of like Nate needed confidence to demand the things that he wanted. But in that moment, like, I'm sorry, if I knew Jade in real life, I'd be like, wow, that's a really shitty move. You don't care about this job. It's not like you're fucking being mandated to never give that seat to people. You could simply give this man this seat. There's no one in it. But then the fact that when he comes back, they now have a relationship, and it's like, I didn't dislike her as time went on, but I was like, are we just forgetting that that's like a really shit person thing to do? And then to have so much of Nate's storyline focused on her and him getting a girlfriend, and like, all, it just felt so weird.
When he's in his villain era? Like,
it's almost like I could get it if it was like in his villain era. As a villain, he got a girlfriend and realized after that,
like Rupert.
Exactly. And then he was like, I don't like the person that I am like this. And if the person that I'm with wants a villain, then it's not worth it for me to be with them. It's not enough for me to just have a girlfriend or have a girl be interested in me. It has to be someone that is also caring. It was just so weird.
It was also like she didn't really notice him as somebody of interest until he brought the fucking model and was like had the manager on his side. Like that felt weird too. And I'm like, is she into that? Like, what is that?
Because the model left the first time. Like, you want to share my?
Yeah, the first time was pity because he got stood up. It's just, it was just
like they were trying too hard to make him likable again because they.
For yeah, after he spat at himself in the mirror, which I totally forgot about, I was like, whoa, something's changed.
And then he spit on the floor at that press conference, and I was like, yeah, this is a lot for me.
this is too much spit. This is, Nate has a spitting problem.
But it's such a shame to go that, because honestly, that spit, though, it was very well done, okay? That fact that his spit was a sign of his self-hatred, and then we just, like, so, like, it's so that's weird true. That, like, arguably, Nathan's self-hatred is battled by, one, the fact that a girl was finally into him, and two, his dad said one single nice thing. Yeah. And then Nate went, you know what? I'll go back to being an assistant kit man. And I'm just like, you built up such a good villain, kneecapped him, and then that was his, like, redemption, quote-unquote? Like, I just... I don't know what would have been better, but I know something else would have. And I had trusted these writers to do it because season one and two were so good.
I will say it was too real when he also no longer worked at the restaurant. It was just lying in his, like, old bedroom and, like, his mom was bringing food. I was like, oh my God, is this me the first time I was jobless?
I can't wait to get into that era for myself personally.
I want someone to fucking deliver me food to my depression bread. I have to get up and make that shit myself.
And she took away the dishes. He would just leave it at the door. Wild.
Classic. So it was just...
Okay, and then we move in... Sorry, I'm already raging about Keely and
Ryan. Oh, you know I'm ready, oh. Stephanie!
Wow, you fully skipped the more enraging thing, I feel
that,
like.
I think, looking back on anything, they set this up as, or maybe it was indirectly, maybe I'm reading into it, but in my head, this was a romantic comedy from the start. You had the meet cute with Roy and Keely, and you never, I mean, they could have ended up together, and we just don't know it. But I don't think that was the vibes.
I agree.
It just wasn't the time now, and I get that, but then give us some fucking
honestly, hint. A little bit disagree, because I think the way they ended it suggested that
they were not together.
Or was it a threesome? A thruple.
We are not giving them credit for something that they cowered out on. I blew out my mic with that.
Your conspiracy theory.
Okay. Here's the thing. And I fully agree with Stephanie. This is a romantic comedy. This is a show that has said time and time again, they love romantic comedies. So I completely agree with Steph.
The Nora Ephron? And they completely ignored
it. They chanted her name, okay? They believe in a comedy, a romantic comedy. So I am 100% aligned with Steph on this. Especially, again, season one was so much about Keely and Jamie somewhat as a couple and then as two separate people. And then really we get into season two and we see so much more of Roy and Keely as a couple and explore that. And they...
So cute.
Again, the fact that they built up something that people loved so much. Like, it's something to say that, like, those two actors have so much chemistry. The scenes were fantastic. Mm-hmm. It was great. And then you get into this season. And this season really is about, like, Keely coming into her own. But then also, it's about Roy and Jamie becoming... friends. Let's call it friends for now. But there is a fucking undertone, okay? And we know it. We know that there is.
Jamie looks at Roy's ass. I swear to fucking God.
Jamie is always...
He's got him a little bit of a crush.
He absolutely does. But he's had a crush since he was a teenager. And I think, like, so much of this season, I would have never guessed that this show would have, like, gone in the direction of a throuple. I really thought they were going to go in the direction of, like, Roy and Keely broke up. Weird that it happened off screen, and we arguably never find out what it's about, even though we can infer based on the ending of the last season. They break up, and then, like, you kind of get the idea, like, okay, Keely is coming into her own. She's Keely fucking Joan. She's having her own shit going on, and Roy is growing to be the person that someone like Keeley deserves. And one of the ways he's doing that is by being a better person. It's by working with Jamie and improving Jamie, who has also had such a good personal growth story. Like, the Jamie talk from season one to season three, best. Absolutely, like, so good. And seeing them, like, come together and connect this season was so well done. But definitely, and I would say for certainly around the Amsterdam episode, it really truly felt like, and I do believe this, I think that the people that were writing the show were writing towards a throuple. Because this show has consistently been very unexpected. It has taken things that you thought were going to happen and it has turned them on their head. It has given you little crumbs to say like, oh, you think it's going to be... you know, a romance between Rebecca and Ted, and then gone on to show you that, like, no, they connect in a very different way. It's told you that, like, divorce is an okay thing to happen, and you're still a family, and you're still in each other's lives. Like, this show does things that are different and unexpected, and I believed that they were working towards this throuple because it made sense. The three of them together made sense. And when you watch the second to last episode, okay, Mom City, and fucking Roy and Keeley go into Jamie's bedroom and find out that the two posters that he's kept up his whole fucking life, or at least since those pictures have been available, are a poster of Roy Kent and a poster of Keeley, and then they're sitting there together on his little twin bed with the soccer print fucking blanket on it. It's the most clearest sign of, like, he's in love with the both of you.
And then he walks in and he's smirking, the biggest smile on his face. And I was like, this man is obsessed with both of them.
I've read enough thruples that this scene exists and happens all
the time. But then also what kills me is, like, okay, so you see him smirking, and let's say for a second you're going to scratch the thruple thing at all. It's just going to be like, you're just scratching the thruple. That scene is meant to imply.
You're just teasing.
Yeah, but it's meant to imply, like, Roy and Keeley are, like, healing, and, like, maybe they might get back together. And Jamie has this little, like, smile on his face. But then in the next episode, out of left field, you find out that Jamie is like, no, actually, I'm still in love with Keeley, and I know in my heart that we're meant to be together. And then him and Roy have a physical fist fight over it. That is what? Like, that is
too much season one vibes.
We're beyond this
for no reason.
We've been here before, and it's such a disservice to the progress Roy has made, to the progress Jamie has made, to the autonomy that Keeley has as a person, and their attempt to try to give her back of being like, we decided to stop fighting and just come here and make you choose. Like, yes, that scene ends with them realizing they're fucking morons, but, like, you shouldn't have gotten here in the first place. It's so backwards. It's so insane to me that the one show that I think could truly say, like, we built a romance between three people that genuinely worked. Like, Jamie is clearly in love with both of them and, like, needs that kind of emotional support that he can get from Keeley, but also that, like, push and challenge that he can get from Roy. And, like, Keeley is just someone that is so lovable and absolutely has space in her life for two people.
Christina's writing her own fanfiction right now.
I'm just so mad because it's one of those things where it's like, whatever, I made it up in my head, and then so I go and read fanfiction about it. If other people made it up in their head, and that's fine. Nobody made up in their head in this one. It's not subtext, it's text.
That bike scene was straight out of a fucking romance movie.
They literally go on a fucking 12-hour romantic bike ride together. You're gonna tell me?
Did they have an alternate? So you know how they end up cat on the screen. So they end up fighting and they're trying to compete after Keeley. Was that when they go to her place? Was the scene going to be, actually, I want to make out with both of you right now?
And not after they did, like, that. Could have been not it? After that, because I'm mad. In that thing, I think the person that comes out the worst is Roy. Because Roy goes to Jamie and is essentially like, listen, me and Keeley are slowly getting back together. You need to back off. And that's not just like season one Roy. That feels like a Roy that never even existed.
Yeah.
I agree.
That's true.
Not to be too niche, but Cassandra Clare wrote a thruple, and you're telling me Ted Lasso can't write a thruple? In a YA novel, I saw a thruple with my own eyes.
There was some sort of weakness that happened here. I don't know who decided to remove that. Who did they even remove it? Did they even not think that this was a throuple? Like, what was the brain process?
You're telling me no one in that writer's room reads fan fiction?
I don't believe this. Crazy. Too many straight people write.
Well, okay, then now we have to talk about Keely and Jack. Yeah,
because go ahead, Nat. Let's go into it. Because I know you have thoughts, and then I have follow-up thoughts.
Here's the thing. The first moment we see Jack's shoes, I was like, this is going to be a fucking lesbian couple. I'm so excited. I'm so excited for Keely. I was like, if I can't have Roy and Keely, I'll have this. I'll fucking have
this. You're thirsty and weak, Natasha. Commit to your couples.
And then I was like, oh, Jack's really cute. They seem to be really cute. And then obviously with like the whole when Rebecca was talking about like this is how it starts, and I was like, fuck, this better not be what this is. I'll be enraged because I have seen too much now, and I want one healthy couple. Just give me one healthy gay couple. Just give it to me on screen specifically. And I think maybe it was like fresh off of Ultimatum, I also was just like, I can't do this again right now. I was like, I don't want to see some weird power dynamics. But then what do we fucking get? We get some weird power dynamics shit all over again. And I was willing to let it go up until the scene where KJ, what is her fucking
KJPR?
KJPR, literally PR. Keely Jones PR. Oh my God. I totally forgot. Anyway, up until the moment that they were like the funding was pulled, I was like, okay, whatever. Jack disappears, ghosts her, whatever.
Nat, and then I was the standards need to be so much higher.
I was like, you know, no harm done. They had their little thing. It wasn't long enough for me to like feel too emotionally bad about it. And then when the funding was pulled, I was like, are you fucking joking? This bitch was gone. This bitch was gone. And this still. I've never been more enraged in my life.
All right, so let me jump in. Keely and Jack. So, Jack comes into the scene, and I have the thing where I'm like, are they giving us Jack as an apology to be like, we're not going to have Keely and Roy, but it's going to be Keely's going to end up with a woman, so you'll be happy. You know what I'm saying? And in the face of that, can't be mad at it. Love gays. Always want them to be happy. Even though Keely is queer, regardless who she's in a relationship with, so it's always going to be a queer relationship. We love to see a same-sex couple be happy. But I did not like Jack from the get because she is Keely's boss. And to me, it felt so much. Yeah, it's cool. I have a cat that's just like literally hanging out watching me. It's all good. But I did not like Jack from the jump because one, she's Keely's boss. And a romantic relationship is deeply, deeply inappropriate. Because she's not just Keely's boss in the sense that, like, oh, you could be fired. She's the person responsible.
She can take away her
exactly. Thing. Literally, as we saw, she can take away everything that Keely was given. And it just felt like, even early on for me, it felt like Keely was another thing that Jack, I don't want to say owned. I don't think that was the vibe. But Keely was just another, like, trophy in Jack's life. Another thing that was like, Keely is so...
Until she was not perfect.
Exactly. So while I wasn't a fan of Keely right from the beginning, I also felt like, exactly. I can't remember exactly the scene, but I do feel like when they ended up having sex the first time, I felt like Keely was in like a really vulnerable moment. So I did think if it was something where it was like they were just having fun, that could totally make sense. Didn't necessarily need to be a romantic relationship. But once it got into that, I was immediately like, don't know about this, not sure, not a fan of Jack, as I said. The fact that Barbara clearly had issues with Jack, and for some reason I trusted Barbara implicitly immediately, even before Barbara said that she only liked clothes that said the truth. Something about Barbara, I was like, this is a weird person who at the end of the day is going to step up. And that's exactly what Barbara did. So I trust my gut in that. But with Jack, it just felt so weird. And just like, again, from the moment that Jack is paying for everything, when I feel like Keely's whole...
Love bombing.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. Someone pay for all stuff for me. Absolutely.
I love a gift.
Take me on vacations. Yeah. I love it. But, like, Keely's whole thing is about becoming independent. It's about, like, yes, she spent all this time dating footballers who were rich and bought her these things and gave her nice things. But, like, Keely was coming into her fucking own. And someone like Jack was only ever going to have room for a Keely that got to a certain point. And again, once Keely made a mistake and wasn't perfect to Jack and Jack's friends, then Keely immediately became like, oh, this is my friend, Keely. I invest in her company. Even though, what, 10 fucking seconds ago, she was like, me and Keely are in a serious relationship and everyone just needs to be okay with that. And, like, even to have her tell that to the whole office with no thought to what that's going to look like for Keely at all, Jack was disrespectful the whole way. And Jack had the kind of money that always meant she was going to be disrespectful. So I was not surprised when the relationship ended. The fact that you were still willing to give this a shot after Jack has that horrible apology letter for Keely to post on her socials, after Keely is the one that had a crime committed against her, absolutely not. That was, I already didn't like Jack, but fucking final nail in the coffin.
Oh, yeah, I did not like her at that point. I was like, oh, absolutely not. I thought, like, you know, like, the moment where Keely was like, oh, she's paying for everything, I don't like that, and I want to counter that. I was like, oh, okay, so they're building, like, maybe more of a healthy relationship. Then when the picture stuff happened and the video stuff happened, I was like, this is it. I can't do it. Like, I was like, this is where, like, the... Like, even when she was like, oh, like, yeah, my lawyer just looked at it and it wasn't me. I was like, yeah, but you literally approved. Would have looked at this. Yeah, like, you would have looked at this and you said yes. And I was like, absolutely not.
And this is a situation where I'll say, like, I actually don't mind, like, a messy queer relationship in this sense. I would have been happy with this, of, like, this kind of being presented. Because at the end of the day, no one's sexuality was invalidated. It's not like Keely goes back to men after a bad experience with a woman. Keely still has just as many sexual and romantic feelings for women as she does for men. Like, it just felt genuinely like a relationship that happened at a bad time in life. And that's kind of maybe why Keely was, like, susceptible to it. And Keely had already moved beyond that. I would argue it was an unnecessary storyline because Keely already got over this with Jamie. So, like, she kind of was just relearning things that the Keely we know has already gotten over. And Keely and Jack are so far removed from the main storyline of the Richmond Club. Particularly because Keely is doing so little PR for Richmond this season. That it just, like, on the one hand, I'm happy.
But then she ends up doing it in the end.
But, like,
because I guess she cuts her funding. And I was like, again,
doesn't need to be there. It was, like, so unusual because I thought, oh, like, maybe they're going to build up, like, her... Not just her, like, independence, but maybe, like, Jack is going to help her become, like, a stronger, like, I don't know, like, PR leader slash whatever. Because at the beginning, we kind of see her flounder a bit in her business, where she just doesn't know how to control it so much.
But she has that, like, in Rebecca. Exactly. So you didn't even need her.
That's true. 100% she should have gone to Rebecca this whole time. And I was like, honestly...
I almost think a better storyline could have been, even though I don't want to, like, get rid of a queer relationship, but in this instance, it really was a situation where I was like... If you were going to do it, I kind of feel like you need some way to involve it in the plot a little bit more. Maybe, like, not to have Keely date another footballer, but maybe if it had been, like, a woman soccer player that she met doing PR, and then, like, her relationship with her is kind of what leads her to suggest that Rebecca starts an all-women's team. Like, something that just felt a little bit more tied together. Yeah. But I almost think what you could have had done instead is... Have Keely do, again, the work for Richmond while she also builds up her PR firm. Have her lean on Rebecca for support. And then have a moment where maybe Rebecca and Keely don't agree on the right approach because they are two different people that have two different styles. And have Keely be confident enough to say, Rebecca, you know, I love you. You're my best friend. I trust you in this stuff, but I have to do things my way. Probably in something like with that Shandy vibe is probably what could have happened, with, like, Rebecca being like, you know, you have to get rid of Shandy, you can't even give her that first shot, and finding some way for Keely to be like, I have to at least make this mistake myself or something like that. And then you could have just, like, strengthened their relationship and have them maybe even be on more of an equal footing even still, because now they're, like, two powerful boss women that have their own style but can still be friends through it. Like, maybe something like that, just, again, tied more into the main storyline. Because the stuff with Jack is just so removed. Even though, again, I don't want to get rid of a queer relationship, but it was just, it was weird and it was unnecessary. And it, again, it was so weak in comparison to the beauty that was Roy and Keeley's story. They wrote a very good romance. To try to undercut it was so odd.
Yeah, it just, and it also just, like, leaves a bad taste in your mouth after you're, like, because you're just like, oh, now I just feel shit.
Yeah, like, well, like, on the one hand, again, I like a messy relationship, but what was the point? If Keeley didn't learn anything new, at least. I was really excited with Colin's story. I was interested in that. I don't think we need to talk about Trent's storyline. Trent was just, like, a fun little addition to the season, and I'm happy that they had it. But
Trent's storyline was great.
But Trent's connection to Colin as, like, both gay men and maybe you don't have Keeley and Jack, but you show more of Colin's relationship with his boyfriend, so you still get that queer relationship, like, representation of, like, not just, hey, this is a queer character, but, like, here's them actually being in a relationship where they have, like, a genuine external hurdle to get over, which is the fact that, like, even if Colin is out, that's going to be a big deal that involves a lot of shit going on. And guess what? It would involve PR, a thing that Keeley does. So it's almost like, almost like there was a very obvious way to connect everyone here and get what we got.
Does it not feel like somebody wrote this season with certain intentions and then somebody else just picked up
and,
like, halfway and through I'll or tell something?
You, okay, so one thing I was going to say, and I think about this a lot with the Roy Keeley situation too, is during the writer's strike, someone posted this thing on Instagram about how working for streaming services, especially during COVID times, was different than working for regular networks. And they were talking about the fact that, like, you're supposed to write in a room together with other writers. Like, that is the way a TV show in particular works. People take the leads on episodes, but it's a collaborative situation and everyone is aware of the scripts of the previous episodes that they build on in the future ones. But something that happened during COVID and that this person worked on for this pilot was a bunch of writers got in a room for a little bit, couple hours, couple days. They made a note of all of the key things that needed to happen in that season. And then each writer was sent off individually to write the script own in their own home and then just submit their scripts. And then they would film those. And there would be no other, like, connection of the writers together.
No, like, review with together. Yeah, no. Like, that's
just, like,
wild.
Here's the script. And, like, the person was saying, too, a big issue with that is you have no idea what happened in the other fucking episodes. Like, there's all these tiny little things that you don't know. And, like, the reason script writers are on set when things are being filmed is so that they can make edits to their own script when they see the way, you know, actors interpret stuff or the way small scenes that didn't seem like a big deal play out. And now they know that they can bring together. And it almost felt like that's what was happening here. So many times it felt like one person wrote one episode for the beginning of a really beautiful journey. And the only thing that the other people knew were, like, Colin is gay. And Roy and Jamie have spent a lot of time together this season. And that's the only information that they had. You know what I mean? Like, it's so wild, especially that the fumbling is so much at the end.
Yeah.
Well, I think that explains why Ted, who was he this season? I guess that you think that's the point, but I was just like,
I will.
I mean, he's not
lost,
present.
He's confused.
I will give
he'd
you.
Never, he doesn't really want to be there because he leaves in the end, in my opinion.
I will say, I actually do agree. I thought that was the point, and kind of what I said yesterday, too. Mm-hmm. I think there is an intention behind a lot of the decisions made that is smart and is good. It is the execution that failed. Because I do think the point of this season is, again, it's not about Ted. Ted doesn't belong in England. He didn't come here because this is what he wanted to do. He came here to give his wife space to hopefully fix their marriage, a marriage that fell apart while he was in England. So, like, why is he still in England? Why is he still separated from his son? Yes, there was something that he wanted to do with his team, but Ted's goal has always been just to make them better men. And he did that. You know what I mean? Just his presence, just by showing people that you could be kind and it was a worthwhile thing, the lesson has already been learned. So Ted, for sure, has kind of run out a lot of his usefulness. So I did think, especially at the beginning of the season, it was very intentional that Ted was stuck. He was not growing. He was not learning more about soccer. I stand by that. I think it's kind of wild that they had him dream up the concept of total football when I actually think it would have been more satisfying to have Ted be like, this is my last year. I came here to do something. I have lost time with my son to do it, but God damn it, I'm going to do it right. And then I'm going to go back home and have him make the choice to learn more, to do the research, to find out what total football is and realize that's the approach that makes sense for this team. So weird to have him just dream it up out of, like, existence. Wild choice. In an American-themed restaurant. Like, just an insane after situation. Sipping
some drug tea.
But again, even the fact that, like,
fake drug
kind tea. Of the point they were making there is, like, Ted is better in America because that is home for Ted. It's just purely that the execution of that was so off because it didn't build and then come to a very satisfying conclusion. It just was like, they only acknowledged that this was Ted's last season in the very last episode. And so it's not a climax that he's leaving and he's finally going home. There's just something about it that, again, you had the building blocks of what you were trying to go for here, but you had no instructions of how to put it together. And so it just kind of fell flat. And didn't work. Yeah, it is because the whole point of Ted is like, Ted, why are you here? But that leads me into my angriest of this season, which is how genuinely dare you for how the rest of the show approaches concept like therapy and healthy relationships and being a strong person and like tackling things, but like knowing when something's right and knowing something's wrong. How dare you have the man who was the couples therapist for Ted and what is her name?
Not important.
Ted and Ted's wife. I'm very sorry to that blonde lady.
Ted's ex-wife.
Ted and Ted's ex-wife have their couples therapist start dating the ex-wife even after Ted made a note to his new therapist that, like, the thing is, every time I went to therapy, I felt like I was being ganged up on and that everything was always about my faults. And like he would turn it around on the things that I was failing at and then have that man date that woman. And the only thing that you bring up is that like Ted's uncomfortable with it. No, babes, that's functionally like, I don't know if you call it illegal against regulation. But conflict also, like, problematic as all hell. First of all, Dr. Jacob was a dick from what we saw. So I'm very easy to believe that he tanked that couple's therapy because he wanted to date that woman.
I also think the reason that his son didn't like him was they're trying to say, like, they're not going to end up together because the son.
Yeah, like, even like at the end where he was, like, they were watching, like, the football match and he was kind of, like, disconnected. Like, I get people that don't like sports, like, totally get it. I do enjoy some sports sometimes. If somebody's watching a game, I'm not going to be that interested. But, like, the way it was supposed to be meant to be, like, a heartwarming watch between the family, and he just kind of, like...
I think it was meant to show him in a poor-ish light. And I will say that killed me, too, because there was a moment this season where I thought maybe what they were building up to with this reveal was the idea that, like, maybe him and his ex-wife, their relationship actually wasn't over. Even though they had this great closure in season one, there's something to be said that, like, maybe you weren't given a good chance because of an interference with someone else. Ted clearly still loves his family. Is it a weird storyline? Sure. But am I willing to let you to, like, see where it goes? Especially knowing that, like, Ted is not connected to England in the sense that, like, he's going to live here forever. He's found a new home.
And when they visit, and, like, when, like, the couple visit as well with, like, the kid... She even has some Tedisms, and it felt very like nobody else can get this except for them.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I think you could have reasonably said, like, they realize that maybe even if it doesn't end up working, they're willing to give it another shot. Does it kind of undo some of the greatness about season one, which is that their relationship ended and they were still family and they got their closure? Yeah, it does. Again, it's almost a rehash of something we've already gotten over. But it's a rehash because you created this insane thing that we didn't know before. The fact that their couples, the one chance that they had to try to make things better came at the hands of this. And we saw Ted in actual therapy does the things that his wife wanted him to do. He starts to understand that, like, his relentless optimism is a lot, and it comes from a place of trauma.
Dr. Jake is a saboteur.
Dr. Jake is a sab-a-fucking-tour. I just, it's
wild. Why I think Ted didn't, theories are that Ted would end up with Rebecca, and I feel like the reason that he didn't end up with her is to say that they're going to end up, Ted and his ex-wife or whatever,
yeah,
are gonna be they're gonna honestly reconcile.
I was okay with the fact that Ted and Rebecca didn't end up together, even though they fucking teased us in that last episode at the beginning, which was very enraging.
They were teasing us because for three seasons.
They were teasing us for three seasons, and I was like, I'm okay with this not happening. They're very good friends, and I love that friendship, and I do believe Rebecca with her like Amsterdam boyfriend,
her little pilot
is
man.
Gonna have the fuck yeah is gonna have the fucking time of her life, and she deserves that. But it's also like, it was just, like, so weird at the end to tease that, and then also for him to go back. It was just, like, I don't know. Like, it was kind of, I don't know. It was annoying. I was annoyed.
Ted and Rebecca definitely are two people that, like, had they ended in a relationship, would have been perfectly happy with it. I think they created two people independently that are interesting and strong, that make each other better together. And I love the power of friendship. We know who I am, okay? I love that they end up and they just actually have this, like, I almost argue that, like, this is a great example of, like, platonic soulmates is, like, Ted with Rebecca and Ted with Beard, of just, like, two people that are, like, deeply connected and, like, committed to each other, but it's not necessarily romantic. It's just about the fact that, like, together we are better and we created something that nobody else in the world could have done. And, like, I love that for all of them, regardless of the way that it ends. But it was, they baited us so much about Ted and Rebecca for so long that I do think the last one was, like, a little final throwaway for all the baiting that they had done in the previous seasons.
So annoying.
But it is, you know what, and I will agree with you, it kind of ends up with that same thing of, like, they just rehashed a lot of stuff. You actually mentioned this yesterday, and at first I was like, oh, you know, it's whatever. There were two people that are very important in each other's lives, so of course they're still kind of awkward around each other. But Sam and Rebecca as well, like, they still had these little moments, and, like,
for what reason?
Rebecca has her little matchstick man and her little matchbook, and there's these things of, like, there's these two men that are very important in her life. And then obviously she ends up choosing this, or not choosing, but, like, she stumbles upon this pilot that she, like, fell in love with on a boat over the course of a single evening.
Didn't know his name.
But it's just those things of, like, again, just rehashing stuff. You baited Ted and Rebecca and it didn't happen. And it's not going to happen because Rebecca should be in England and Ted should be in America. Totally fine. Ted and Rebecca and Sam, you had it. It was great. They loved each other, but it's over. We don't need to kind of go over that again as a possibility to suggest that, like, I don't know if they were suggesting that maybe Sam still has feelings for Rebecca. I do think they're just two people.
I don't think so.
That, yeah, I think they just had strong feelings for each other and it ended and that's fine.
Yeah, like, I was comfortable with, like, very, like, friendshipy vibe, but they kept giving each other looks. Yeah. And the looks were what, like, killed. I was like, there was no necessary reason for this, you know? Like, during a romantic Nora Ephron movie, like, you don't need to do the look then.
And
it doesn't need to happen. The look between Roy and Jamie, maybe.
That, again, it just doesn't make it.
But anyway, okay, wait, one last thing. Beard's wedding was so fucking weird.
It was, don't get me wrong.
A dream.
It was always, that's true. They did kind of suggest for a moment that it might have been a dream.
Perhaps because it was happening while Ted was still flying, right?
Wouldn't Ted be there so, even if it wasn't a dream?
Technically, it wouldn't have happened while, I don't know if what they were going for was the idea that Ted was just dreaming of everyone that he knew being happy. Exactly. Like, I think there's a suggestion there that, like, this is an ideal version of what could happen to everybody. And it's part of Ted's dream that they're just all happy. And that's why he wakes up from the plane and they see him running off. But I think it's also, like, I don't know, for each person, it was both the beginning and the end of their happiness. Not the end of their happiness, but like the end of a journey to the beginning of happiness. Mm. And like for Ted, for that, it was getting off that plane, being back in America, reconnecting with his son. So like kind of could maybe be interpreted in a couple different ways. I do not think.
It did have a very dreamlike quality. So
Beard's wedding especially. But I don't think that it had. I don't think Beard got married while Ted was on the plane. And I certainly don't think Beard would ever get married without Ted. That's insane. You don't stop being best friends with someone just because you don't live in the same country anymore. Especially not those two. Like, so weird to suggest that, like, what, Ted can't fly back to the UK occasionally?
Yeah, like, also, like, the fact that, like, it's not even, like, a matter of cost. He literally flew first class.
Because back AFC home. Richmond was paying for that shit.
That was pretty much all my thought. I don't know. Were there any other last thoughts of certain things?
I have
in the show.
A handful. I will say one quick thing. One of my favorite episodes is the episodes where we meet Sam's dad. Just in general, that episode is one of the better written ones. The beats of it are really good. The comedy feels really right. Big fan of that episode. But I realized while thinking over it after talking to you guys yesterday and a couple of points that you made, Nat, that like there's just storylines that are unnecessary. I liked the storyline of, like, the guys all coming together to fix Ola's. It really, like, again, cements, like, who they are.
I love that.
And I love that for Sam. I love that every time Sam winds up in these situations where, like, the world is against him for being who he is and where he's from. Mm-hmm. And also, again, just, like, being... Sam is Ted Lasso without being annoying. Like... He is the nicest man in the world. So it's so nice to see that, like, even in when these horrible things happen to him, people come together and support him. But then,
to be fair, that feels more of like a natural Ted Lasso storyline versus like some of the others. Like, again, like we talked about, like the Jack storyline, the PR stuff, all of that felt unnatural for Ted Lasso.
Yeah, and this one.
But like these ones, even the Amsterdam episode felt pretty good.
Oh my God. With them all ending in the pillow fight was like such a good full circle moment.
Good.
Like, so good. But even that, it kind of occurred to me while I was thinking of it, like, we did this. It was a good storyline. It felt like Ted Lasso. It arguably is unnecessary because we know that those guys will come through for Sam because Sam is a captain. Yeah. Sam is their team member. Sam believes in these things. And because Sam believes in these things, he makes the people around him better. And to thank him for that, they support him. Like, we had been there. So even though I really liked that episode, I thought it was really well done. It did occur to me that, like, we wouldn't have lost anything without it because we didn't learn anything new. We already know that Sam is this person. We already know his team will come through for him. So it was one of those things where it's a shame that it didn't do that. And I will say, as like my last kind of final thought for the whole thing, as we wrap up with our time limit so that Stephanie can leave us, is
apologies, y'all.
Season one, especially of Ted Lasso, and I said this before, was one of the only shows that made me think, like, should I... Am I not trying hard enough to be a better person? Like, I know who I am, but the line, why be judgmental when you can be curious, really, like, hit me as, like, ooh, who are you as a person? And how are you putting yourself out into the world? And this show was very good at that. And I appreciate that, even if I don't change who I am and I don't really learn anything from that, I can have that thought and I can intake it from that. Because that show really presented to you the idea of a hopefulness, of being better, of unrelenting optimism, even in the face of things that are bad. But, like, you can do what it takes to be a Sam, to be someone like that. And this season doesn't have that for me at all. And I think that's what it really lost. I think that that's why this season lost maybe a little bit of its soul. I think in an attempt to show that Ted is not meant to be where he is, but maybe not showing the full force of Ted rallying to, like, give it all for his final year, but with the conviction that he's ready to go back home and he's ready to be back there with his son, with this new life, even if it doesn't involve his ex-wife, like, he's ready, let's go. It lost it, I think, for me because of that. I, at no point at any time watching the season, did I think, wow, I should be a better person. But I have thought about that before.
Like, while Ted is dissociating, thinking about his son and shit like that, I was like, wow, this show is also dissociating. And I really felt that because I, too, was dissociating.
Not to read into it, but, like, was Jason Sudeikis really, like, internalizing what was going on in his personal life?
Maybe. I'll be honest with you. I've seen a lot of comments saying that. A lot of people have said that they felt like they revisited the Ted and his ex-wife. I want to say Vanessa, but I think I'm stuck on fucking ultimatum.
You've been stuck on Vanessa for a while.
She's such a bitch. No, I can't remember what her name is.
Particularly with the... with the therapist becoming the new boyfriend. I'm like, I'm reading into things that I'm nosy. I'm the worst. That's what I'm doing.
Exactly. It's just one of those things where a lot of people were like, did they come back to a storyline they had already closed? Because there were some things to work through there. But,
which is fair.
You know, I'll give it up at the end of the day. I hope they make a spinoff about AFC Richmond, both the men and the women's team. I would still watch it. Honestly, keep giving me Sam and Roy.
But keep the episodes
30 minutes. This is a comedy.
Short and tight.
Yeah.
And that's it for us on Ted Lasso. We would love to know your thoughts on this season. What was it, Solace? Were you angry? Did you like it and think we're wrong? You're wrong, but we'll happily laugh at you for telling us otherwise. You can let us know on Instagram and on Twitter at EatsCast. And take it from there. We'll be back next week with an episode that I can't remember what it's about, and who cares, but we'll be reviewing something that we're interested in. Yeah, exactly. We'll be here. We should probably decide soon so we can get that watched and recorded.
Do I have to watch something?
I don't know, man. Maybe we should pick something we've already
seen. I think we should do fan fiction, personally.
Yeah. Let's
do excellent.
Just listen, we're taking the theme of fan fiction that we didn't get thruple, we did not get in Ted Lasso season 3, and we're pushing it to what we've read recently.
Okay, so
get your fan fiction tabs open.
I'll go do some research. I'll find some. I'm gonna specifically find a couple of Roy, Keeley, Jamie ones that like specifically address the misses in the show. Okay, we're gonna get this done. We're gonna read some fix it fic, and we'll come back and we'll recommend those. So you'll hear back from us from that. Thanks so much for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Goes to artist Clara for the song Wallflower and Jazzar for the song Please Listen Carefully.
I read Allie Hazelwood's new book and I was like, listen, I'm into her. I love her writing style.
Honestly, I'm okay with it.
Listen,
I don't love them, but I'll read them.
I'm entertained. Like, you just all you have to do is entertain me. She's doing it. And I don't know what the fan fiction couple of the latest book is, but I'm here for it. I'll take it. I'll read anything she writes. Allie Hazelwood, I'm a stan.